Hello and welcome to the Movers and Shakers podcast. My name is Gino Barbaro, co-founder of Jake and Gino, multifamily investor, educator, father, and mentor. Today's guest is JP Alpano. JP is a Jake and Gino student, soon to be best-selling author and co-founder, CEO of Significant Lifestyle Communities, a company he founded shortly after starting his multifamily investing journey back in 2017. Now, JP has over $60 million in assets under management and 700 units under ownership. Welcome to the show, Mr. JP Alpano.
Gino, thank you. You know, I don't know if you know this, but like I broke my podcast cherry on your show. My first podcast interview was with you and Jake sometime in 2018 or so. And I remember being so nervous for that phone call, and here I am many podcasts later. So it's great to kind of come full circle and talk with you about the origins, the beginnings of how I got started with this, because I have you and your community that you've built to thank for that.
JP, why were you nervous? You're talking to two jabronis, to Jake and Gino. What could possibly go wrong in that interview, JP?
You know what it is? It's your mind has an ability of making things bigger or smaller than what they really are. Typically bigger than what they really are, right? And so for me, in that moment, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be on it. And it's silly because it's like, it's a recorded thing. It's a recorded phone conversation, right? With a camera. Whoop-de-doo. Like if there's I stutter, guess what? I'm going to cut that out. So, you know, you're looking back, like your problems don't seem as big as they really are in the moment. But that was it. Like, I wanted to go back to that because that was my first time being on a podcast and I thought it was a cool thing. So good stuff.
And you look back, let's talk about the problems bigger than they seem that they are. You were living a great lifestyle. You were driving nice BMWs. I know a little bit about the JP Alpano pre coming down to the Southeast. Had a great job, you know, nice, comfortable lifestyle. Why did you come out and seek Jake and Gino at multifamily specifically?
Well, it started as a tech sales account executive. A couple of things were kind of all converging at the same time. I had been in my job at that point in time for about, I guess, 7 or 8 years. And I was getting that 7 or 8 year itch. I felt like I learned all that I could learn in that role as a sales guy. So there was that was one element. The other element was I was starting to make more money than I'd ever had before, which is wonderful. They don't tell you this. As you make more money, you also pay more in taxes. And so I was seemingly becoming frustrated with how much in taxes were being taken out of my paycheck. And I know it's a hard thing to complain about to many people because it's like, oh, poor you. But there's an almost demoralizing effect to that, right? Like, you know, there was a check I was supposed to get for like 40K and I got it and it was like 20. And I'm like, man, 20, half of the check went away. It's a lot of money. And you get to a point where you feel like, man, I'm just paying to work. And yes, it's a great living. But still, it kind of sucks. And then the other piece too was I realized like I didn't want to be tied to my job for the rest of my life. I wanted to have freedom of choice. Like if I wanted, the joke I say is I want to do pottery on Tuesday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I want to be able to do that. But when I felt like my income was directly tied to how much energy, effort I was putting into my job as a sales guy, and I felt like I had golden handcuffs. So all of these things were kind of coming together and like causing me to realize, okay, I gotta do something. The do something was really, it was the taxes, what broke the straw on the camel's back. And it forced me to go figure out something else. And I, you know, tried my hand at doing day trading. Because I knew, you know, capital gains income is taxed much lower than active ordinary income, right? So I lost some money, wasted a bunch of time doing that. But really that helped me realize what I was looking for was passive income. So I was talking with a couple friends and they reminded me about real estate. I'm like, oh, that's cool. So you start looking at real estate, you know, and you know this, there's 1,000 different ways that you can get involved in real estate. And I remember for me, you know, kind of getting going on the bigger pockets path, you know, the burst strategy, which is cool. Mm-hmm. But it didn't make sense to me. I didn't understand why I would go through, in my mind, the brain damage of learning how to buy a house, fix, renovate it, rent it out, refinance, and then do that over and over again. If ultimately in their roadmap, it was like, you do this 20 times and you buy an apartment. I literally thought to myself, why don't I just learn how to buy the apartment? The problem I had in 2017, 2018 was nowhere to go learn how to buy an apartment complex until I found your podcast, Jake and Gino, listening to you and Jake in the early days of the podcast, and then having access to the community when you guys launched. So that's the origin story, my friend.
I have one word that really stuck out in that whole beautiful soliloquy. You said they, Who is they don't tell you? Can you expand upon that a little bit? And then I'll share with you what I think that word they means to me.
So refresh, which part did I say they or refer to they?
Okay. I just so stuck out to me when you said they don't tell you when you make this, they pull this much out of your
Sure,
out of your
sure, they. No, it's like, is that even, yeah, you're right. It's not even a they. It's more like common, unspoken, not even common. It's the idea everyone wants to make more money. That's what it is. Everyone wants to make more money, right? But they're blissfully unaware of the problems that could or could not be there as a result of that. The, you know, there's more complexity that can come into your life as a result of making higher income. And you've got two ways of looking at that. You can be like, you know, pissed off about that, or you can be constructive about that. I think becoming an entrepreneur, changing your mindset and being aware of those thoughts is the secret to success, right? But the alternative is you can kind of get pissed off. So for me, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to solve that problem because I wasn't prepared for that problem. My tax accountant at the time was like, just get more write-offs. Like, thanks, George. That's cool and all. But like writing off my the mortgage, a portion of my mortgage for my home office doesn't scratch the itch. It's nothing. It's a mouse fart in the grand scheme of a hurricane, right? It doesn't do anything. So that's who they are.
Now we're going from they to mouse farts. I like that, but I'll tell you why. And I'll tell you why they don't tell us. It's because they need W-2 workers.
Yeah.
The entrepreneurs and taxes are written to stimulate behavior. Mm-hmm. For those people who read the 70,000 pages of the tax code, it's there to have entrepreneurs create jobs, create housing, things that the government cannot do. Yep. And how do they do that? They stimulate behavior by having JP have an itch. And how does JP scratch that itch? He goes and he says to himself, how do I learn to save on taxes? Oh, multifamily. I can start investing in real estate. And a lot of people have gone down that road. Now, some people may hate that concept. And I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. My wife always tells me, and I tell my kids, life isn't fair. That's just the way it is. But understand the game. And if you want and you're comfortable with paying 50% of your taxes, you can continue to do what you're doing. But there are vehicles and there are avenues to save. It's really all about putting a ton of effort in on the front end, learning it, educating yourself, buy right, finance right, manage right, join the community, start putting the effort in. And as you start doing that, you'll start reaping the benefits that you are looking for. Now, JP, when you got in, what was your concept of multifamily? I mean, early on, was it just, you know, a lot of students get on board, they don't know what to expect. They don't know what they don't know. They think, I'm just going to do one strategy. I'm just going to buy smaller deals. But then this world of syndication is around. And then this world of partnering is around. And then we have seller financing. That's another tool that I could use. What was your initial benefits and how have you, I guess, transitioned or transformed your investing career?
It's funny. Every time I hear the word transitioned, I smirk, I chuckle. It's been hijacked. You brought a great point. In the beginning, so I went from technology into real estate. Real estate is a whole industry. It's a, you know, massive industry, and there's lots of little niches in it. And so, like, all right, cool, apartments, they're attractive. I want to learn about that. And then you're entering truly a whole new world, right? Because there's so much to it. You're doing new construction, existing, value add, build to rent. Like, there's just a whole host of ways that you can get started. And early on, I'll be honest, I had a set of analysis paralysis on figuring out what I wanted to do. Value add makes sense. I didn't know what size. Do I do a smaller complex, like a 12 unit, right? Or a 50 or several hundred. In the beginning, I had this was a journey in overcoming a ton of limiting beliefs. I know you're a life coach. You get this. There was so much imposter syndrome going on in my mind that I had to work through a lot of things. I had hangups on like raising capital from investors. I had hangups on even talking to brokers. Like, I was so nervous about that. I remember like writing out our first LOI Bill Hamm. It took me 4 hours to review the LOI, right? Because I was so nervous about things.
But it should take you 40 seconds. 4 hours, 40 seconds.
But like in the beginning stages, like there was a lot for me, like I was going to do 50 units and under because that seemed like it was safe for me. Like I can wrap my mind around that. Bigger units. There was a time I went two years ago, I went after a 1,061 unit apartment complex. I had to stop myself. I'm like, I can't believe there was a point in time where I would have fallen on the floor even just thinking about that, right? But like, you grow past it. So for me, early on, it was smaller apartment complexes, value add in the Southeast, and I thought I was going to be a passive investor. I got really involved in all the active stuff, underwriting deals, looking for deals, because I'm like, cool, I'll keep doing my sales job and be a passive investor. But what I found was, I loved you, I loved the community, I loved the people, I loved the prospect way more than my sales job. And I made a decision, I think I'm going to figure out how to step away from my sales job and do this full time. And that was ultimately the decision I made. And of course, I've evolved over time and doing syndications and learning about that, how that works. But like, my mindset going in was one thing, and through the experience here, it's changed. And I think that's okay. You know, you won't know until you do it and you experience it. And that's all part of the process.
I want to thank you for sharing that, because you're being a little vulnerable on the show. I mean, the first show, I'm sure you weren't vulnerable. You're like, my name is JP Albano, sales guy. But this one, it for me, I'll use the word beautiful, because to me it is, because it's one of those things where you start out, you don't know what you don't know. And we all have limiting beliefs. We all have imposter syndrome. We all start out as beginners. That's what I want everyone listening to this. We're all starting out from ground zero, and we're all learning. And these are all skills that you can learn. And I think there's two things that separate people from being really successful, especially when they join the community, versus ones that aren't. The first one is they hold themselves accountable with other people. I mean, JP was on coaching calls. He came to a ton of the events. He was on the Monday lessons. He was out there doing deals and doing the work. That accountability piece is really, really important. And the second part is putting in the work. If you can try to figure out both of those components, anybody can become successful in any venture, especially multifamily. If a pizza guy and a drug rep can do it, and a sales rep from New Jersey can do it, anybody can do it. Now, you wrote a book. I mean, let's talk about the book. I mean, what was the idea behind writing the book? Because I know it's a lot of pain. I know it's a lot of anxiety, a lot of stress. What was the reason why you wrote the book?
So thank you for that. So I never thought in a million years, I never even considered the idea of writing a book. I never even liked reading books, much less writing books as a kid. I was a video game guy. Like, I loved playing video games. I really didn't get into books probably until my early 30s, really when I started learning about real estate. Bigger Pockets, they have a whole thing about books. And then, of course, joining the community, like Go Giver was a great book inspiration that I learned from you, and the art of war, whatever, that one. So like, getting exposed to really great books came later on in life, right? About a year ago, I joined another group, because in growing my real estate business, the one thing I didn't do very well early on, and I'm okay with it now, but like, I look back and I'm like, that was the thing, was never really learning how to market myself and my company so that I can continue to grow my investor base. You know, we grew to 700 units by doing it like rolling up your sleeve style, friends and family, partnering selectively with other people to help us raise capital for our deals, and doing that. But then we reached a glass ceiling. Like, I've lost money on EMD or earnest money deposits, because I couldn't raise the capital for the deal that we need after we got under contract. And so after, you know, losing a couple of deals like that, it's really frustrating and feeling like you can't grow your business. I took matters into my own hands and joined a group to learn how to raise capital kind of the right way. And, you know, one of the early things that happened as a result of that was one of the guys there was like, you know, what's your story, man? I'm like, well, I'm a tech sales guy. He's like, dude, that's your thing. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, you're from tech sales. You'll be able to tell your story to those people, the people in technology sales. You know the flights, you know all the things. And you should go try to, you know, raise capital, educate them about real estate, raise capital from them. And I felt like an idiot, because I'm like, oh my God, this has been in front of me this entire time. But I was at the right place at the right time to receive the information. And so I spent all of 23 pretty much learning all the marketing strategies, right? Reading a bunch of books from Russell Brunson to other like experts in copywriting. And then one of the things they talked about, you know, it was kind of an advanced tactic, but I like to go full on, is, you know, when you're ready, write a book to tell your story, and write a book to use it to attract people that want to work with you when you want to work with them, sort of thing. So that was the approach. And the story is titled So Rich You Can Quit. It's my story from tech sales into real estate. And I try to demystify the concept of investing in real estate. I think what was amazing to me, Gino, and I'm sure it was for you, when you got into this world, right? I'm sure it was like, where has this been all along? Like, why am I learning about this now as an adult? Like, why didn't I learn about how assets work and like how to read a P&L and, you can scrounge together some money from friends and family and go buy a 12 unit together, right? And like make money. Like, it's insane. And so like most salespeople or any professionals don't know about this world. So I'm trying to demystify it and show them that like any high income job is really part one of a multifaceted strategy for creating wealth. Like, it's cool. You're making good money, but you're still trading your time for money. How do I take that and create leverage in my life where I can diversify my W-2 income from my job and have other assets that generate income for me, passive income? And so I teach about how passive investing works, or like show you what I did, which is become an active investor. So that's the idea. That's the story. And it's been a process, dude.
Yeah, but before we go to, I want to give the link out right now. I don't want to wait till the end. Where can the listeners pick up the book?
Yeah, so you go to thetechsalesinvestor.com/book. thetechsalesinvestor.com/book.
And if you had continued along, when you're making these decisions, JP, they're really big decisions. You're married with kids. When you had the decision and that discussion with your wife, what did she say? Did she say, JP, you're making really good money here. Are we going to risk everything because of a dream that you have? Or how did you have that conversation with your wife?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate. As I've gotten older, you have more experience, right? You get to meet new friends, meet other couples, and then you get to not compare, but kind of compare your relationship with your spouse with how others' relationships are, right? And I got to say, in this lifetime, I'm super blessed that we are in alignment on 99% of the things, right? So like when it comes to health, personal health decisions, informed consent, how we're raising our children, how we eat, our diet. And in this case of real estate investing, my wife has been on board and fully supportive of that. I know I have some friends, it's a different story. And that I empathize because that's a huge person in your life, like the most important person in your life. And if they're not in your corner, like that's a source of incredible stress. So I've been very, very lucky that Jamie has been very supportive of what I do. And she puts up with it, but like she supports my craziness. So it's all good.
And for anybody listening, Jamie probably puts up with it, but I'm sure Jamie saw all the hard work and the commitment that JP put into it. He's not saying to Jamie, yeah, I'm going to do it on the weekends. I may hang out a little bit. I may put a little bit of money in here. That was the case. If you're going to commit and to do something and you want your spouse on board, you better put in the hard work. You better put in the hours when the kids are asleep, and you better get up extra early in the morning. You better go to those conferences that you don't want to go to. That's the reality. And that's how you get buy-in from your spouse, to show them that you have a big enough why and that you're committed into doing what you want to do.
I think that's the thing, right? You can have a spouse that maybe isn't fully supportive of it yet, right? They've got some hesitations on it, maybe because of your track record, right? Like in the past, you've had these big ideas and you don't do anything about it, right? But yes, you can convince them, right? Because they want to support you ultimately, right? They love you. But you convince them once you start showing up and putting in the effort. And that's where you'll see that shift and change, where they'll become your biggest fan from one side of the aisle to the other side, where you were like, I don't know about this, to like, honey, you got this, right?
And this is all about influence and sales. Before I ask you the next question, I had a quick story about my spouse, my wife. When we got married, August 30th, 1998, that was the day she became financially free. I mean, she didn't have to worry about money for the rest of her life. She's got other responsibilities. So when I came around in 2011 and 2012 saying, hey, Jewel, I want to become financially free, she's probably saying to herself, I'm good, bro. You got a box over here. I got some money. Don't got to worry about anything. What are you talking about? Yep. Until I painted the picture and I made her understand that it wasn't just about paying bills, but maybe we can become a little bit more charitable. Yeah. Maybe we can, be comfortable and I don't have to stress about every $5,000 dental procedure that I need to do on my 6 children. Once I made her understand that, and I made her understand the pain, I was using my influence and my persuasion on her. And this ties right into capital raising, really having influence and persuasion. Give us some ideas of what you do. And I love the thing about you're speaking to a personal and specific avatar with tech sales. What have you done to really help raise capital for your deals?
So, and it, for those that are kind of new to this and avatar, like, it's really important. If there's one thing I learned, it's that if you're talking to everybody, you're talking to nobody, right? So if you're going to kind of create your message and kind of create your little spot in the internet, and you want to create your brand, you have to pick someone or an audience that's very specific on who you're going to talk to and resonate with, because otherwise they're not going to know that you're talking to them. So when I say, hey, if you're a tech sales AE and you're making great money but paying a lot of money in taxes, like if you're a tech, you'll hear, you know, everyone else will just walk right by. So that was really important. And I didn't learn that lesson until relatively recently. And it's all good. Like I'm grateful for the opportunity for that. But as far as raising capital goes, it's funny. I've taken the approach that I think has helped me become very successful in sales, which is a couple things. One, I don't pressure anybody. For years, I mean, even when I got into sales, like I loathed the idea that I was a sales guy because I had the negative connotation, which I think most people do about salespeople. Like it's salesy. And what has become, I guess, named now, right? I'm very well connected into the LinkedIn sphere of sales coaches and things like that. And what's become more apparent is like sales today is not about selling. It's about listening, asking questions, and really taking a consultative approach to things. And so that's essentially what I do when I'm talking to investors. I ask them questions, I listen, and I, you know, kind of show them what I do. I don't pressure anybody. It's always about timing, right? Timing's gotta be right for them, for us. Like, do we have a deal? Do we have a deal? Are they in the position to invest? And there's no point in trying to close anybody. I mean, everyone has different opinions on kind of closing or using tactics to kind of drive people to making a decision on things. But I haven't really found the need to do that. What I'm noticing now though, is for capital raising though, is things that require more high touch, right? I think gone are the days, at least for now, where it was easy to kind of phone at home, create an email campaign, send out your deal, and then like people would just subscribe. Now you've got to pick up the phone and make it more personal. It's not super scalable, but you've got to pick up the phone, engage, send text message, voicemail, and have these one-on-one conversations with things because the market's different. That's my advice.
But isn't that a good thing? Because everyone's relying on AI, yep, and everyone's relying on these campaigns where if you can stand out and you can create connection, yep, and that's what your story, your origin story is. It's about your truth. It's about your connectivity. It's about creating that personal touch with that investor. And that's what you want, because you want to make sure that that investor is a good fit for you, totally, but you're also a good fit for them. Totally. And I think it's unfortunate, but if you go back last 20, 30, 40, 50, 100 years, mm-hmm, sales really is what you listed. It was listening, asking questions, and using the consultative approach. Anyone who is really a masterful salesperson was doing that. Yeah. And we lost that, yeah, with automation, and we lost that with the internet and social media and saying ABC, always be closing and blah. That was all lost. And I think that's what ended up happening. And I think right now you're just really, I think, pointing out the obvious to anyone who's an amazing salesperson, just like, yeah, nothing's changed. I mean, just we've been doing this for the last 30 or 40 years. And when you bring that into the capital raising, you're really offering an opportunity, yep, to the person, yep, that you're raising capital from. I think that's really important. Yeah. I don't know if you want to expand upon that. Yeah, I think that's,
you know, that was the thing that I had a hang up on. Remember the person limiting beliefs early on was like, I'm going to be asking people for money. This is uncomfortable. And then the mind shift to that is just looking at it from a different perspective. It's like, well, I'm not asking them for money. I'm offering them an opportunity. And those of you that might be new to this, like you're hearing this with me for the first time, like that's really a thing. Like that's super important. Think about this. Like my dad busted his butt. Like I'm sure a lot of our dads did, but providing for his family the way that he wasn't provided for, whatever else. So my dad used to fix CAT scans and MRIs for a long time. He lived in Long Island. It was a 2-hour trek into New York City, you know, going there and then 2 hours coming back. He worked the full day. So he was in the car the whole time. It was like murderous work. And I didn't realize that until I, you know, went to work with your dad day sort of thing. I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible. So my dad, he made, I don't know, 50 grand, 60 grand at the most. At the end of peak of his career, he used to work overtime, all these things. And by being able to help put his money to work, we put like, I don't know, 40 grand into a deal, right? 2.5 years later, sold the deal, 3 times their money. I was able to make for my dad in 2 years' time with, how much work did he do? 2 hours? Like he signed the paperwork, went to the bank, wired the money, deposited the check sort of thing. Then he has made in a few years of his life, working full time because of the opportunity I presented to him. Right. And that's, you got to think about that. Think about that sort of money-making potential, that you can provide to your friends, to your family, to your investors. And that's a huge difference, mm-hmm, between like that and, oh, I'm asking so-and-so for money. It's not the same thing.
I think this is important. As you're listening to this, I want you to start creating your origin story of why multifamily for you, because you have to come onto that call with energy. You have to come onto that call with purpose. You want to come onto that call with, I'm going to change your life. I so believe in this 100 unit deal that we're going to make money, but I'm going to work my butt off, that I want you to invest with me. You're investing with JPL Banner, or you're investing with Jake and Gino. And I think you need to convey that, right? But you need to listen. Because if they're fearful or they have hangups about money, you have to address all of those things. So listening is important, right? Asking questions, getting to know them is truly important. But then having a consultative approach, like you said, hey, dad, you're busting your butt. You got the money in the stock market. I've done day trading. It's not a place where you want to have your money. Let me put it into a hard asset. Let me let it work for you. I've got my money side by side with you. Yep. This is what we're going to do to grow it. Making them understand that, because they have no idea. And by the way, that commute is that's a shit show in and of itself. I would do it from White Plains to Manhattan. I did it for a year. I was actually walking around Grand Central one day. This is 1993. No, this is right during Dinkins. I'm walking around like I'm befuddled, like what I'm doing here. One of my friends walked up to me and she's like, what's wrong? What are you doing? And I actually said to myself, I'm done. I am out of this place. And it was like, that was a seminal moment in my life saying that I do not want to work in a cubicle. I do not want to. And like 6 months later, we ended up buying the restaurant. But I remember those commutes, and that is very challenging. So JP, that's another story where you can share with people that this is what I did for my father. I'm a steward of his money. That's a huge responsibility. And I have to really be locked into what I'm doing here. So that's really, really, that's an important element to raising capital. Now, going forward, I mean, what's the strategy for you going forward? Where do you see yourself in the next 5 years?
So things have changed a little bit. You know, it's funny, Gino, for better or worse, I think for better, right? My timing for getting into real estate, 2018, getting my first deal done in 19. All right, this is going great. Going to 2020 and then COVID pandemic and then 21. And then 22, interest rate nonsense, 23, more interest rate nonsense, actually more 23. It's been a hard, hard time to do real estate, right? But I'm looking at it like this. I can get through this. I can freaking do anything because these headwinds are freaking strong. But I'm committed. I am persistent. And like, this is nothing, right? So like what we've done was we went from a model where we were trying to acquire 3 to 4 deals a year on our own, right? We have our own property management company. We own and operate Value Add in the Southeast. That's been hard to do. We spent a bunch of money on EMD because we couldn't raise the money, right? So last year was all spent on marketing, growing my investor base, which I've been thankful to be able to do that. Added about 50 new investors to my list, which is great. And I'm adding more each day. The focus now right now is we're still going to work on doing that. I still have to grow my investor list. And then we're going to be, we're currently raising capital for other best in class sponsors. Now what I like about this is number one, we're going to be doing like small chunks, small raises, you know, $500,000 a pop, great opportunity. We're going to do frequent, offerings. So we'll be bringing in, you know, call it 8 deals a year, 9 deals a year to our investors. So constant deal velocity to check out different asset classes. So outside of just apartments, we're going to partner with best in class sponsors that are doing mobile home parks, self storage, build to rent, you know, ground up construction, maybe even interesting things like marinas, or oil and gas, like kind of, you know, other alternative investments outside of just, you know, traditional mom and pop, apartments. So different opportunities, different locations, diversified by different sponsors and more frequency, right? And then also by kind of combining my experience, my partner's experience with a few other fund managers, where collectively we've got, you know, 100 years of experience in different asset classes, being able to really, really dig in and on the due diligence of those sponsors and those assets and those investment opportunities, bringing people like truly low risk, best in class opportunities is super exciting. So we're going to be doing that. We're raising capital. We're doing that now for our investors while we build up our investor base and then also opportunistically, you know, raise capital for our own deals. So that's the long-winded answer to your very simple question.
Well, it's really cool. Is you went from limiting beliefs to fund the funds, which is awesome. Last question before we sign off. If I'm listening to this and I'm saying to myself, well, now's not the right time, I can obviously dispel it because when JP started, it was probably not the right time either. And if you wait 2 years from now, it probably won't be the right time either. It's only the right time when you're ready for it. But if I'm considering getting into multifamily, what are some of the things that I should be doing right now?
It's funny. I've talked to a couple people about things like even last year was like, I'm not sure if it's a good time. Isn't rich interest rates high? Yes, there's always, depending on your strategy, there's always a strategy for the time and where you are in the cycle. Right now, what has me excited about real estate is there's going to be more and more distressed operators coming out, 24, 25, 26. There's still some headwinds in certain markets with respect to delivery. So what that means is when new construction comes online, there's new units hitting the market, right? So that's going to put pressure on older apartment complexes. They're going to have to lower their rents. Mm-hmm. But being strategic around, you know, what you're buying in those areas, that helps you. Being able to take advantage of, not take advantage, but of the opportunities from distressed sellers that can't get out of these loans that are floating rate interest rates, and now they can't qualify for a refinance, means that there's going to be, you know, 20, 25, 30% plus discounts out there in great markets. You know, I don't think people realize this. It's not going to be in like Timbuktu. It's like in amazing markets, whether you're in Phoenix or Dallas or Houston or Atlanta or whatever else, like prime markets. So like having access to a trunk load of cash would get me really excited because I want to go on a shopping spree. So mm-hmm. It's all about having the right strategy and knowing what strategy to employ at that rate in the market cycle. It's a cycle. It's not like, you know, beginning and end. It begins, ends, and comes back around again, right? So you just got to pick the right strategy for the right time.
I'm smiling
because we talked about that many years ago.
You know, it's very interesting because you can always buy real estate. You can't always sell it, but you can always buy it. And understanding that concept and understanding what we teach as far as the conveyor belt, yep, the three pillars of real estate, we talk about the three-step framework. These are all frameworks within frameworks that will actually limit your downside risk, which is really important to learn if you're going to get into this business for the long term. How can the listeners get a hold of you?
Yeah, check me out, jplbano.com. I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me on there. But if you're interested in my book, check it out, thetechsalesinvestor.com/book. I'm very active on all the things, Gino. I have to be. It's 2024.
I know. So you have a young JPL Bano driving around in his BMW in New Jersey. All of a sudden, he's starting to make some extra cash. Those checks are getting bigger, but the money going in his pocket is getting smaller. And he's saying, wait, I got 40 grand here. Why am I only getting 20?
Yep.
I've got to solve this problem. You know, with little money, you have lots of problems. With a lot of money, you have lots of different problems. And he goes in search of the Holy Grail. And he finds multifamily real estate. And he says, this is a pretty cool thing, but how do I do this? Do I buy a 12 unit? Do I buy these bigger deals? How do I get into this? I don't want to go buy one home a year for the next 10 years and have 10 different homes, 10 different property taxes, 10 different insurances. That seems like a verifiable nightmare. I stumble upon Jake and Gino. I see this pizza guy from New York. If that jabroni can do it, I can obviously no problem do it. And guess what? A year after I joined, I'm on their podcast for the first time. Yep. And I'm learning so much. But the thing that really sticks out in my mind as being JP is I had all these limiting beliefs. And as I start working on it and I start conquering those limiting beliefs, continue to peel back the onion, continue to go on the journey, continue to say to myself, I thought I needed money to make money. I thought I needed to have a ton of experience to start buying deals. And as soon as those limiting beliefs start getting shattered, everything starts to change. And as you get more experience and you plug yourself into whatever community you're in, and as soon as you start holding yourself accountable, and as soon as you start working with your spouse and working really hard for the dream, and then one day you want to become a passive investor and you're like, sales job ain't doing it for me anymore. I'd rather go into this thing full time. Yep. This looks really awesome. Yep. The opportunities are endless. And within the span of 5 years, I'm not going to use the word transition. I'm going to use the word transformed because his life was really good. And as most of you listening to this, we have first world problems. A lot of us do. But we want to live really powerful, impactful lives. We want to not just change. There's nothing to change in our lives because our lives, for the most part, are all pretty cool. We just want to transform our lives. And I think that's what happened to JP. He was doing really well at his sales job. He was just getting burned out. He knew that there was something more to life. Multifamily came into his life. And to me, it seemed like he's made an amazing journey these last 5 years. And he's got the next 5 or 6 years already planned out. He's got a best-selling book coming out. One more time, give me the link to buy the book.
Yeah, it's thetechsalesinvestor.com/book.
And there you have it. From tech sales, not reading books, to now writing books. Yeah. JPL Bano, brother. Thanks for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Likewise, Gino. Thank you so much, brother.